I was giving a general hekdamah, and the hekdamah was principles and faults. You saw this. You got some more questions that you're thinking of right in the middle? Okay. Just sit down and pay a little attention to the following, and then we'll have time to add more questions. Okay. There are certain other principles involved, but not as general and as fundamental as the first that I mentioned last time. You know, there are a lot of people who went off to there. You'd find them in the most surprising circles, you know, coming from all forms and shapes of ultra-Orthodox communities. Almost universally, when they're questioned as to why, the reason is that they lost faith because of the unanswerable behavior of some people who in their lives were there to teach them and inspire them and deliver to them the wrong message through their behavior and even through their attempts to be mechavas to the children. These include rabbeim and rabbonim and yeshivas and parents. And sometimes parents lose themselves and say things that are very regrettable and hurt and like stab the kids in the heart. And they call them horrible names and recall mistakes that the children made in a way which is mashpil them at law for. And things of such nature, which are so brutal and cruel, attacking personally to the child. Not always, and here even rarely, but much more frequently than should be. Feel so hurt by the people who are supposed to help them, who lost themselves in a moment of crisis, that they start developing and nurturing and nursing serious doubts in the mind and in the heart as to the reality of everything that they've been taught, the Messiah that they've been given from parent to child. Somehow they feel has been handed to them by people who are so brutal or so insincere that they not only hate their parents but they begin to doubt the entire Messiah that's been given to them and question it. And when some opportunity to discover another type of life, the kind that's publicized and advertised all over the place, presents itself to them. So they say to themselves, well, if the one that I've heard till now is so questionable, let me find out if there's some kind of alternative. And I'll go taste it and try it. And here, unbeknownst to the parents, this faithful child begins to look in other directions. B'ni al telech b'derech ito. Right? You should take away rak lucham in a sivoiso. And a person should remember this all the time dealing with children. That they shouldn't do anything no matter how carried away they are by anger and frustration. And no matter what offense the child did to him, that he feels like exploding personally in retaliation for this terrible, unforgivable offense. Afal Pikein, remember the consequences of it. The consequences sometimes are beyond belief. A number of years from now, you may find this child of yours in Greenwich Village or worse, because he threw away everything, because that insult that he had was so deep and annoying that he just can't get rid of it. It doesn't lighten. Its intensity increases as time goes by. So that has to be remembered. In other words, even if you have clear the Yesoides that I presented last week, and I think those are the basics, that includes everything. However, one major mistake could do so much damage, like I described now, that you have to be extremely careful. In the history of the children at risk, is very often, 95% of the time, such lives, not a single incident, but there are a single incident is rectified, a single bad word is corrected, and there's a lot of love and apology and just begging for forgiveness that comes between the parties. But sometimes there's no such thing. Sometimes a parent can't lower himself and say to the child, "I was wrong." And that's a terrible thing. That's an unbelievable failure in a parent. A parent has to be able to tell a child, "I made a mistake, I was wrong, you were right. I want to ask you for forgiveness." Okay? A parent can't do that. Go into a little room and put up a picture on the wall and make believe it's your kid and say it over 100 times till you're able to get it off your tongue. Okay? That's one new side. Maybe 12 or 1. Okay. These reflect on cruelty and mistakes made in chinuch. There's another kind of mistake, Rabbi say, that can't be corrected so easily. Another kind of mistake that you have to somehow, sometimes, turn over worlds to protect yourself against making. And that is a mistake that's not based on a personal mistake. Something that father does to the child. Some chisorin in his chinuch. Some words spoken in anger. These could be corrected unless the person had that terrible failing of not being able to apologize and not being able to admit that he's wrong. But they could be corrected. And when a person has just a tendency to be angry frequently, he should go for some counseling, right? If it's embarrassing to his highness to admit that he has to have counseling and someone else's guidance, he could find perhaps a chavrusa who may have a heart-to-heart talk with him and straighten him out. These things help very, very much, believe me. There's no psychological illness that predisposes a person to these chisroinus. Okay? And there's no psychological illness that immunizes himself against the cure. It's all b'chaylus, a good, wise friend could set him straight. And if he needs some kind of professional help, that good, wise friend will show him and prove to him that he needs it and he'll accept it. Okay? That's where I said things that could be corrected, and I just added a little bit to be corrected. There are certain things that can't be corrected. Okay? That's where someone allows the child to see the other side of his life. And it's not just the parent, but that's where some rabbonim And sometimes you can't get away from it because they're published in the newspapers. Show him that there are certain very, very ultra-Orthodox Jews who present to him and to the world a very religious face, but underneath there's a Mr. Hyde, you know that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, both lurking under the nice, kindly soul. When a person cheats in business, when a person is not honest to his close yedidim or to anyone, dishonesty is a crushing condemnation of a person that someone had previously trusted. When it becomes clear to him that that person cheated others and was dishonest to others, his faith in that person is lost, but his faith in all. Vayivis be'eno hushloyach yod memorat chalavadoi vayavakesh ma'aroi koch ha'yudim la'aviv and so on. Am Mordechai. All rabbonim, all parents, all people at shul, because they're dishonest. The main thing that will have children respect you and never lose your respect, even if there are 100 sinners, there'll be a perfect honesty, set of life guidance principles that are infallible and can never be shaken. He'll see that in his parents. So even if he sees the opposite in a lot of those whom he formerly trusted, he'll still be strong in his adherence to Yiddishkeit, because his parents are the first line. They'll be very careful. Never ever show a weakness to your children in these inyonim. And there's only one way to make sure that that happens. Only one way is never to be dishonest any place in the world. Even if it's absolutely certain that your children will never find out. There's no hechetimtzim for a person to protect himself against revealing the secret other side of his life. There isn't any. You forget about it. All your plans, and anyone's plans, I'm not saying your, it's in the figure of a sensor, because everybody sitting in this room is able. And I really mean it. But I'm just trying to give a message, and maybe you could give the message over to others. There's nothing, all the tachbulas in the world, that hides some secret side of your life, especially from the children, who could be sneaking behind you, having their ears to the door and their eyes to the keyhole, while you're absolutely certain that nobody's listening to what goes on. But there is a million other ways for that to happen. But there's just no protection. And the paper tells you that a rabbi of very, very good religious reputation did this and that and the other thing, which is criminal. I'm not criminal, but conducting a public criminal institution for payment, willing to do all kinds of illegal and immoral things. A person has to tell his child, you know, everyone in the world has a nisoyan, and every nisoyan is suited for the person who has the nisoyan, right? When you become a leader, a new set of nisoyanis is thrown on you. Because till then you never knew the problems associated with leadership, and all of a sudden they're thrust on you all at once. And it takes courage like a lion to overcome the nisoyanis. And for some people it's just too much. We find that in Chumash, we find that in Tanakh, but Klal Yisrael and Yiddishkeit is not governed by the people who failed. It's governed by the people who succeeded. And they're the ones whose example you should follow. You know that there are certain people who failed. And before that, tell them, with all this, it's possible that whatever was reported in the paper is just not true. We don't know. It's still being investigated. And there were many times, I can't say that it's true in this time, but there are many times that there were false accusations made, and the accusers turned out to be the real criminals. So let's wait and find out. But even if we find out that the report is true, we still have to know what I told you before. There are people who get into the limelight, become public figures, and all opportunities for shoychat, for any kind of false behavior, was presented to them, which they never experienced before. They don't know how to deal with it. When a different side of the social world is exposed to them, and it's the only that you only hear about, read about, happening to famous people, will all of a sudden come to you when you become famous. So just be mispallel that when the day comes when you'll be famous, and there's a very good chance that that'll happen, because self a little praise is very, very important in such situations. You'll make sure that the next generation of leadership in Klal Yisrael is enriched by people with the highest principles that never, never, never fail to falter. Okay? It's an important message to give over, so that you can encourage a person not to be crushed and disappointed by some public figure who went sour, who said the wrong things, who behaved in a very reprehensible way. Okay? Introduce your children to tzaddikim, to people who themselves are of such high caliber that they'll always and forever be respected. And there's something else. I once took a bachur with Rami in the shiur. I took a ride over to Camp Tarvitas from Camp Aguda, which I already had transferred to. Picked him up and brought him over to Ur Shragia to see Rabbi Yaakov. I spent a little time with Rabbi Yaakov. And then I brought him back to Camp Tarvitas, which is still going on. The years go by, Rabbi said. And then I drove back to Camp Aguda. You know, you're talking about a total of something like 160 miles or something, at least. And I told him why. I told him that sometimes a parent wants a child to get piano lessons, and he's very talented, but there's something else than talent that's needed for piano lessons, or for anything. A lot of work and a lot of energy. And a lot of chazora, and a lot of, they talk about sleep deprivation. Well, that's play deprivation. My child doesn't want to give up everything in order to practice. So the parent who knows of the immense talent he has, not the parent who imagines his child to have talent, you know, can't keep tuned to a single note. But the parent who really knows that the child has talent, you know what he does? He takes him to a performance by some virtuoso player, top in the line. And when you listen to that guy, your heart goes out. I could tell you, because I had that experience. I've heard Rubinstein play. He's unbelievable. And a number of others. I went down to Carnegie Hall and to Lincoln Center, but I was certain that I wouldn't meet anybody else there. Never ever happened. But anybody who really, and what'll happen to the child? You know what the child will say? Will think in his mind, this is what happens when you complete the program. When you came to the end of all that practice, this is what you're able, capable of doing. Listen to it. You're capable of making every heart in the audience beat 10 times faster, just out of his spiteless, just out of listening. So this is what it does. This is what the perfect person who reached the shlemus is able to do. Are you willing to try? Maybe you'll become someone like that. And the kid thinks altogether different. Yeah, I'll try. And I told him, there's the reason I took you for this long trip today. That's what I told him when I brought him back to Kentar Vidas before Maitreya Kalam. And I told him that the reason I took you to see Rabbi Yaakov, I wanted you to see with your own eyes what the enormous amount of deprivation and struggle in becoming a sholem in Torah could possibly produce, to see someone who's a sholem in every which way. And if you have an experience with shlemus, it'll inspire you to do anything you want. Okay? That was my message. So you have your children, let the children spend a little time with tzaddikim, with people who they could look to as a role model for shlemus in the Olam HaTorah. And then tell them, don't just be meramazit to them, tell them you wanted to see this because achievement in Torah is measured by those who succeeded, not by those who failed. There are very few that failed. You don't have too many people making it to the headlines for doing such wrong things like that case that bothered you. There's a very, very few. But achievement in Torah is measured by those who succeeded. Take a look at those who succeeded. Right? Be inspired by their behavior, by their words, by their manner, by their meters. And then you'll know which path is a true path. So if you parents are perfectly honest and you don't make any time that mistake, then you could correct the attack on their trust in others by showing them things in the manner that I just showed you and restoring it. You could always restore it. But when you yourselves show a deep, dishonest other face hidden side to yourself, you'll never convince the child of anything for the rest of your lives. Maybe someone else will get hold of him and restore his faith in Yiddishkeit. Maybe. And it happens. But there's only one thing that may possibly restore the child's faith in you. And if you go over to the child and you'll say, I made a terrible, terrible mistake. I was so wrong. And I'm never, ever going to do these kind of things again. And I failed in Anisoya. And I hope and pray to Hashem Yisborach that none of that had a bad effect on you. And that you'll turn out never ever to make the same mistake that I did. If a father could say that to a child, then he's able to correct it. But it's so difficult. It's 1,000 times more difficult than saying to a child, when I said some heartless words to you, it was a mistake. Okay? I just want to mention these two things. Back, Dome, let's go with the question. Yes, it's three. The deal will be made to me when I say something. It'll take 10 minutes. Sometimes it takes 2 hours, and that's the least. Yeah, but
okay. Last week we already spoke about having a happy home.
Yeah.
So we have to. Everybody seems to be wondering: is what happens when a child doesn't listen? And that's the first question. The second part is, what happens to repeat offenders?
Let me tell you. I have to revise those two questions in order to provide room for an answer. What happens to the parent when the child doesn't listen? And second, what happens to the parent when the child becomes a repeat offender? And I'm going to take that question and answer it as I asked. then if it's still a good kasha, the way you worded it, I'll respond to that as well. Okay? What happens to the parent when the child has some failing, he's mechutzif, and he doesn't respond, and he does everything? A, the parent should never, ever sacrifice the happiness of the home because of that. He has to always bear a smile. A guy asked me tonight, what happens when I have the kids by doing this and that and the other thing? So I told him, give the kid a kiss on his head, give him a knip on the back of the leg, and say to him, I love you, but please don't ever do those kind of things again. Okay? That will go a long way. Not always, all the time. But that is extremely effective, because the kid wants to know immediately, deep down in his unconscious mind, very likely in his conscious mind as well, what's going to happen to my loving, happy father if I do this kind of thing, which I have a yetzer hara to do. So even if you're going to give him a patch, you have to sometimes give a loving patch. Okay. Like the Gemara says, Chazal said, saying Baba Basra, how should a Rebbe punch a child? The Gemara says, give him a beating with a shoelace. Okay? As I should take in the Gemara. The worst and most energetic beating ever since the world was created, given with a shoelace, Rabbi Sai. Didn't hurt. So, what Chazal are telling us is very simply, let the Rebbe demonstrate his displeasure with the child by beating him with a shoelace. In other words, showing that it's something that he doesn't like, but never display any cruelty to the Talmud. Okay? By doing something to him, like Chazal say about they ended up killing him, and he's protected from the year Miklot because of Xer Sakosa, but it should never ever come to that. One of the cruelest people in world history figures was a guy who the Russians called Ivan the Terrible. And one time, in a fit of rage, he killed his son. His paintings by the master Russian painters of that. They portray Ivan the Terrible sitting there with an unbelievable shock written all over his face. For the one time in his life, he sort of realized that he was wrong. So what should happen to a child when he sees his, or to a parent when he sees his child does the wrong thing? Give him a knip, pat him on his head, and give him a kiss perhaps if it's really bad, and tell him, I love you, please don't do that again. Please don't ever do such kind of things again. You'd be surprised at the effect that that'll have to a child. Maybe he doesn't know what to answer. He'll just be stunned, and he'll go back to his room and sort of evaluate what happened in 100 different ways, and will never be able to figure it out. But he'll definitely at least try. He might not succeed, but he'll try in not doing this thing again. What if he just constantly does it? Why? Because if he hates a horror. We know, we're told, that's what we're taught, no? Yetzer leiv ha'odam ram and urav. And he first has the seichel to fight his yetzer horror when he's a bar mitzvah. And in my experience, the bar mitzvah sometimes, takes a little time for past the age of 13 to sit in. But still show that you're sad, show that you're upset, show that you're unhappy. Maybe show your displeasure. But don't sacrifice your loving attitude to the child, and don't make the family or the home an unhappy one. And tell the child in this little talk, I have a problem with you. You have a yetzer. There's something which is inside every person. And this is a talk that I've had. There's something inside every person that somehow tells them to do something bad and something wrong. And he doesn't know why, but he just keeps doing it. Because he can't say no to that something. And that something has a name. It's called the Yetzer Hara. And it takes many forms. By every person, the Yetzer Hara feels and looks different. And by a child of your age, sometimes the Yetzer Hara says, if you have any thing that you feel is wrong, that you've been treated badly, tell me right away. And I'll see that perhaps you're right. Perhaps it could be corrected. Perhaps you are being treated badly. Is there any brother or sister of yours who secretly is doing harmful things to you and getting away with it? We'll try to see that they make peace with you. We'll try to see that that's corrected. I'm always there to protect you. Get that second yesoid as strong as it could ever be. Without that, you lost. Oh, child, speak over, tell me. Maybe you don't want to tell me, but I'd like to find out because I want to protect you. I want you to grow away, grow up, and get away from these kind of things, from this type of behavior. And I'm always there to protect you. I'm never going to disappoint you. I'm there always. I'll be on your side. But please, I beg of you, make it a little easier for me to be on your side. I don't have to fight off my yetzer hara, which will tell me, don't be on the side of this kid. I'm not going to listen to that yetzer hara. I promise you. But make it a little bit easier for me to fight it. Okay? There's a lot of things. And you might get a flippy answer. And you might get some angry kick and, you know, in the air and run away and say some insulting things. That may be the kid's spontaneous reaction. Never be misspoiled from an instantaneous reaction. At a yesoid lifla. When a kid sees red and he's an onus, he reacts instantaneously. A lot of people do that, right? You know what the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says? Al tiratzes chaverchoi, b'shas kasoi, al tishtadel lirhoisoi, b'shas kalkalosoi. So if he's b'shas kalkalosoi, you didn't see it. Turn around and let him do whatever he does. And machzich nishvisetik. And the kid will start thinking to himself, if my father loves me, despite what I said when he turned around and what I did when he turned around, I'm going to think things over. Either he's a fool, or he really loves me. Okay? That's what he might think. And then,
so what happens if, two things, what happens if you see it, shas maisi, you see, told. I told my daughter, don't take that can. She goes and takes it.
You know what you do? You turn around in Masach Nishvisendik. Because don't react. Don't fall victim to the same exact thing that she did. She responded to your challenge. Right? Instantly. And harshly. You don't do the same thing. You don't show that you're as fragile as she is. She's very fragile. You told her don't, which was justified. You should have told her don't. And her yetzer was too big to overcome. And don't allow your yetzer to be too big to overcome. So that when you tell her later, I'm not angry at you, because I'm sure that you had such a big and powerful yetzer hara at that moment that told you, go ahead and grab it, right? That you were unable to resist. Your answer will be accepted, and she'll love you for it, provided you're not victim to the same yetzer hara.
What age is
very but if you give her a slap, boom, right? So that means you had a yetzer hara to give her a slap and you couldn't resist it. Don't talk to her about not being able to resist the yetzer hara when you did exactly the same thing. So just show her at that moment, just like, you know, you know it, tziporinov bekarka, like Chazal say, and just fight. Put your hand in your mouth. It'll stop two things. It'll stop your hand from giving you a slap, and it'll stop your mouth from saying the things you shouldn't say.
What age is we're talking about the Yetzer Hara is not going to help with a 2 year old.
A two year old sometimes. You have to say, come here. He did a very bad thing now. And you could lay him across your lap and give him a patch of the kind that is Arkasad Mesana type, you know. I had a Rebbe in the first grade who had a ruler on his desk. And when a kid did something very bad, so he called the kid up, and the kid put his hand on the desk, and the Rebbe gave it a hit with the ruler. He hardly touched the hand. That's all. And the kid went back, fully chastised. And that was just enough to accomplish what had to be accomplished. So he didn't have the Arkas of Masani, but he had the ruler which could be used to greater, you know, harm than the Arkas of Masani, but he was careful. He did that. Well, he did it not every single day, but he did it. Frequently enough to me to remember.
So, Jay, the purpose of giving the 2 year old the patch is it just like the temporary thing that they should know not to turn over the garbage? Let's say.
So the kid will
was
know.
Was just to teach them responsibility for the future.
No, the kid will know that that was a bad thing, and that you don't want it to happen again. He'll know, he'll notice that, and he'll accept it, and it may happen again. But L'chol HaPachas, the message is very clear. The message is that that was a bad thing, and that you don't want it to happen again. And if it happens again, maybe do the same thing, and maybe think of something else. Or, like I said, give them, a knip and a kiss. And tell him, I love you, but don't ever do that again. Okay?
Something that child is doing at such a young age, they're going to grow it up anyway when they get older.
So, but that's it. But you want him to stop right now. What you want him to do is not that he should grow out of turning over the garbage can when he grows up. We haven't seen any older kids that turn over the garbage can, unless the Shkotim, you know, on the street. They turn over everything. But what you want him to do is to learn to accept authority, that's, and to resist doing the wrong things, and to gradually, little by little, learn doing the right things. When he does the right thing, reinforce it. In fact, your lesson will not be effective unless you reinforce the kid doing the right thing. So when he does something nice, you kiss him and say, that was beautiful, that was wonderful. And you want to know the best way to reinforce that is later on, or perhaps the next day. You tell your wife, or tell someone else, or even tell his Rebbe when you go on to visit him, say, do you know what Bechel did? He did this wonderful thing. I'm so happy that he's learning such good midas. You remembered it, right? Not only you remembered it, but you remembered it for a long time. And you told others about it. That reinforces a good thing so greatly that he'll want that to happen again and again, and see to it that it does happen again and again, because otherwise he'll get the message that this is a one-time thing. And it's some kind of psychological trick to get him to do the right thing. But that's it. No. Show him always how happy you are over him doing a good thing. Show him that it makes you happy. But remember, don't allow his doing the wrong thing to make you into an unhappy person. That is the biggest mistake in the world, to lose yourself and to growl, right? And become like a stalking bear. I've never seen what a bear does when it stalks, so I'm just imagining.
Isn't that a test of a contradiction? Maybe he told us last week in the chair, you should have pleats. If the kid breaks them, let it go. All of a sudden, now he's turning open.
I'm not talking where the kid went and broke a kid plate. Kid breaks a plate, he wants to take it inside, and he wants to be helpful. And you say, no, it's okay. And the kid wants to be helpful. Why do you still want to be helpful? And what happens? He slips and he trips or whatever happens. And the plate breaks. Then you want to give it to him over the head and tell him, I told you that would happen. That's why I told you not to take it. And you didn't want to listen to me. That's when you're supposed to say, Mendel, it's nothing. Broken plate is nothing. Okay? You try to be helpful and good. And that's wonderful. You try to be helpful, you try to be good, and that's what counts. A broken plate doesn't count. I always remember that little scene as I was walking down in the old Camp Agudah. Now, anybody here saw the old Camp Agudah? Surely none of you were there as a participant, because what are we here in this new place? 50 years. We were here 50 years. Okay. I was a counselor for 4 years in the old Camp Agudah, and a camper, and years in between when I wasn't there at all. And Rabbi Yankel Teitelbaum was the hero of the camp. He was a marvelous person, Rabbi Yankel. And his youngest son, who subsequently married to my first cousin, but he wanted to be helpful. The younger hill, the dining room, by the way, there were three sets of staircases to go up to the old hill. It was a real climb. It was covered by steps, most of it. And in between the steps, but it was all up. And so he was walking back from breakfast, and I had already gone and run to the bunk. And I ran down already. And he was walking back with his son, and his son held a bowl of cereal that he was bringing up, most likely for his mother or something like that. And he wanted to be helpful. He was a young kid, and he slipped, and the bowl and the cereal flopped out of his hand. The cereal was all over the place, and the bowl broke, and he started crying. And his father told him, he has gunishkatin finished my entire. Okay. You didn't do anything. Don't cry, my precious one. That's what it means. So that's what happens when the kittle run in. I mean, there is a big yetzahara to do the opposite here. I gave you a good case. You want to know more about breaking plates? I could tell you, you know, a number of other scenes. But it's all the same. If the kid will go over and take a hammer and break the plate, or he'll take the plate and throw it to the ground and smash it in a fit of anger, then he should get a patch or two. Or at least he should get a good speaking to, and he should be deprived of something if he's old enough. and made to know that such things are not acceptable. But if it was accidental, or like you could say, not accidental, after all, why should he come and insist that he should take the plate inside, when I, responsible adult, who knows that children, when they carry plates inside like this, very often break them. And that's why I warned him, and I knew what would happen, and he didn't listen to me, and that's a terrible offense, and I'm going to growl like a monster now. You want to see the Frankenstein's monster in a full-blown... No. That's what you're supposed to go to the kid and give him a knip and say it was nothing. You tried to help, and I thank you very much for trying to help. You should always try to help. Give him a kiss on his cap. Understand? That's what, when, and how all your plates should break. All of them. Okay? So that when you go through a bunch of kids after 20 years, B'ez Hashem, so you should have three sets of broken dishes. Okay. Left after three, it could be two also. But anything less than that, it's hard to imagine. You might have some type of nostalgic feeling and want to save one or two from each. That's like the Tzinsena Samon. Yeah, what else?
The second question was, what happens when a child says nipple pet?
So when he says nipple pet, you could call him over at the outside and tell him. If you don't know probably what those bad words are used for, they're used by very bad people. And in this family, we only say clean words and nice words. Okay? This time, I'll let you get away with it because you probably didn't know that it's a bad word. Okay? But don't ever say that word again. Bad people in the Goya, the Shkots in the street, those are the ones who use that kind of language, and that's probably where you heard it. And if you heard it from another child, that's probably where he heard it. So, let this be the end of it. Don't do anything. Okay? And it's a good chance that this one little reasoning talk with, which could be by a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old, really, this will break his habit of picking up this kind of, challenging phraseology, because he knows that, or perhaps has a feeling that there's something wrong with it. He doesn't know exactly, he's not shaykh to understand what's wrong with it. But you just tell him that's language that the Goy abuse. And that's why we didn't have to be pure, because our mouths are going to be filled with words of Torah, and they can't. It's like putting dirt into your mouth. Okay?
Repeat offenders?
Repeat offenders, you could.
What about they know that this is something that's going to get you going?
Yes, but it didn't get you going.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, they know that it's bad words, so let me try this again.
Yeah, one second, slow down. But you showed that it didn't get you going. And it's probably going to dampen the enthusiasm he has for that. If he got you going, boy, is he going to do it. You know why? Let me tell you something. Because he knows that Big Daddy, who's 35 years older than him, or something like that, is like a pawn in his fingers. He can make him laugh, he can make him cry, he can make him jump, he can make him scream. And the father is just nothing more than a little clay. Boy, he got him. And that's what many teachers are weakened. They send a message to the kids that I react in the way you expected me to react, and now you've got a whole bundle, a sack full of such kind of tricks to make me sing and cry and laugh and scream and everything else. Please never, ever give that message to a child, that you are a Kaylee in his hand to wield. It's a very exciting thing to be able to take an adult and play with him as if he was your puppet. You're the guy with the strings, right? Guy like that. He looked at the puppet dance. So, don't make yourself into a puppet. Okay? That's why the reaction that I told you is perfect. It teaches the kid his place. And you're not going to be his puppet under any circumstances. You said to him, you spoke to him just exactly what has to be said, right? And you tell him, it's a Yetzer that told you that, and I hope that you'll never do it again. And that's what. I'll never have to have this conversation with you anymore, because you're a good bocher, and I'm going to think to myself that that was surely a mistake.
And if you are controlled, then he's still...
What?
That was all of you. Most controlled, but if you are controlled...
But the kid still did it? Okay. So you could take the kid, and depending on how old he is, you could give him a little pouch and tell him, go to your bedroom until I call you. This kind of talk will never, ever be acceptable in this house. That's all. And I don't care who used it, or which other kids used it, or even if you find grown-up people who used it, but you are not going to talk this kind of talk. That's all. And, you know, a couple minutes later, after the kids has some experience with the dream world, where he's, you know, thinking of how some wicked parent punished him, and so on and so forth. A couple of minutes, 20 minutes, a half an hour maximum, you walk over there and you say, okay, come on, get back to the table. We're still eating. And the next portion was, so, even you're not eating or something else, whatever it is. Just then, and don't let him sort of sour Hansha Yachmitz. Okay. Next question.
Continuing on the idea of being like imaginative, what happens if your child tells you stories that can be some of the most fantastic stories in the world? Mm-hmm. I mean, they tell, you know.
And he says, and he makes believe that that will happen.
Make believe that it happens, this happened, and somebody went and jumped, he went to the potato factory today, you know.
Okay.
Stories, and then where you get this from, my friend gave it to me, you know, that she gave it to you.
No. Don't try to chop in by a lie. What was the tachlis? Never try to chop him by a lie and prove to him that he lied and say that he was.
I'm not trying to prove to him. I know that it's not true. I'm just trying to know what to do.
Yeah, so tell him that. Oh, that's a lovely story, right? And he enjoyed very much hearing it. And maybe tomorrow night when you go to sleep, you'll have some other kind of story like that. Just, you know, you're Baruch Hashem, wonderful, imaginative mind, and you could dream these things up. I really like to listen to them. So tomorrow night, tell me about them. Okay? You'll be, at the same time, you'll teach the kid everything. I want to tell you a yesoid. Listen. I'll tell you a very important yesoid. And maybe it's a yesoid that belongs in the first group of yesoid. Don't make somebody into a choite, right? Even if they intended to be choite, but don't label him as having done something very bad, right? And sometimes you could accomplish that by making him believe that you didn't see it, or you didn't hear it. He knows that he saw it, so you could tell him, oh, you said something. There's somebody who told me, I think I read it someplace, but didn't hear it. Then he was in an office, and someone called up to complain. And they were screaming and carrying on. and it was horrible. So the guy, you know what he did? Suddenly he picked up the phone when he was alone there screaming, and he said, "Oh, Mrs. Gross, I beg your apology. I was called away from the phone for 5 minutes. Could you possibly repeat to me what you just said?" There's no way in the world she would repeat. She would say, I just said that I was dissatisfied with the product. It's like, oh. Send it back to us and we'll replace it with another one. That's all. And that was... That's a good trick. All the energy that the kid had will go into his first performance. And if you ask him over, now I once saw a cartoon that had this important looking person sort of fans out, and there was a reporter shoving a microphone under his face. On the bottom it said, "Senator, could you please repeat that tirade that you made?" We didn't catch it, and I repeated it. You know, there are other ways that you'll be very inventive in discovering them, of how to somehow ignore or not be aware of what the kid, and you'll be mekayem that mitzvah of al tishtadel der oisay b'shas kalkalosay. Al tishtadel der oisay b'shas kalkalosay. Do you know what kind of good advice that is? Did you ever think of it? This advice that pertains to what we're just talking about. Al tishtadel der oisay b'shas kalkalosay. And try to be mekayem that. It's extremely important advice.
To totally ignore it?
No, sometimes, not all the time. Sometimes, when it's good, when your judgment says that the thing to do is to make believe that you didn't hear it. It's a matter of judgment. Sometimes you have to correct and you have to, like I said, give the kid a patch. But sometimes when the kid is out of... when the kid is out of character... Al tiratzes chavercha b'shas kasa. I want to tell you a little story. When I was a Rebbe, this was the first year that I taught. It was when we learned the Sukkos. Next year we learned Yevamos. The third year we learned Gidden. And Pesach time of Gidden's man, we moved from 3rd Street to East 9th Street. Okay? So this was a long, long time ago. I had my shiur in a room then. Okay? It was first year of the that's how I started. But considered advisable because the two parallel classes are older, very much older, I bet. Was sitting in the Beis Medrash, and it was considered advisable that I should be in a room. You know, because sometimes people are sensitive to having someone 40, 50 years younger than them sort of, you know, take over. I had 45 bachrim, they had about 12 age. So this guy was a habitual latecomer. So I called him over and I said, "Next time you come, I'm going to charge you knas. And I won't let you here without paying." So the next time he came late, so I told him, "Please go out until you have a quarter, and you have to pay me a quarter." I first said, "You have to pay me a quarter." He said, "I don't have one." I said, "You have any money on you?" He said, "Yeah, I have a bunch of it." So I said, "And before coming into the cliff, I'll get change." And he came back, and he put 4 nickels and 5 pennies on the desk, and he said with a sneer, "If I had 25 pennies, I would give it to you." He had a problem. He had a problem. I really helped him a lot, because when he eventually got married and other things, and I straightened that out of him, Baruch Hashem. So I really helped him. He had a He had a wonderful home, but it took quite a bit of effort. But he had a problem. I didn't say anything to him at all. And the next day, I didn't say anything. 2 days later, I called him over and I asked him to tell me over Shtikr. Gemara, Toysos, or something that we just learned. And he said it to me. And as he was walking away, I called him back. I said to him, you know, that unfortunate incident that happened the other day. You know, you're a lucky guy that I'm such a kind and gentle person. Like I am. If it was somebody else, he might have wanted to punch him in the nose for him. I said, it's okay, just forget it. But that was kind of it. I'll tell you. You understand? It's like you take a person and who never was Makabel Morris from anyone in his life practically. And from that moment on, you understand, I just got him. So anything I said was, you know, accepted. Sometimes you have to do, you have to wait. You have to wait for the right moment, say the right word. Just when you're absolutely certain, he's ready to accept it. And sometimes you have a hidden rebuke, right? It's a rebuke that I told him, but it was so hidden and so covered with chocolate, even though it was clear that it was meant as a rebuke, that he accepted it with love and gracefulness, like I was certain he would. Sometimes it's things like this that are kind of a kid when he has some kind of rebelliousness in it. Some kind of it's the way he was brought up. That's what he saw at home for these years. So if you have a class like that, what do you expect as a rabbi? You right away to make him over. But you just can make sure the only thing that you're home, those things don't exist. There's no room for rebelliousness. There's always happiness, always love, and you're always firm, unflinching support to the child. And never, ever express any doubt in that. And you should always think, no matter what, even if you told him a little criticism, you told him, look, you've got to work on yourself and try not to do these things. I know you're not able to now. You need a little bit more work. Okay? But you know what happened one time years ago? And I'll tell you, kids, even if they don't say, they could. I said this kid, and a couple of days later, and he said, my Yetzirah told me to do the same thing again. But this time, I was on the lookout. And I resisted. You know that? And that's wonderful. It's the most marvelous thing to hear that. But you should know that sometimes this thinking goes on in the child's mind exactly even though you weren't excited to hear it. Okay? That's what the child says. I tell you, you know, words of admonition and advice are accepted but almost never at once. If there's some resistance, they're not accepted at once. But if they're said, while your happiness and balanced, right, disposition, and your, like I said, the assurance that you're always behind him, had no reason to waver, it should never have. So your advice will be accepted, even if it's not accepted right away. But it'll be accepted somewhere down the line. Like everybody, like we are, and like our children are, and like all people are. They're sometimes resistant to advice immediately, and they'll say some real strong indication of their resistance. They might ridicule it, they might say anything in the world. But it's meaningless. It's an instantaneous reaction. Instantaneous reaction has no value whatsoever. Don't say anything and respond to an instantaneous reaction. If you saw a kid react instantaneously to something that you said critically, don't criticize them. Don't like get that way the fire goes up. Boom! It's like explosion. Don't let it get out of hand. Don't respond to something that the kid said instantaneously. Instantaneous response is a human response. It happens because that is because he's a human being. It didn't happen because he's bad. It didn't happen because he's a mechutzef. It happened because he's a human being. That's all. Just turn away and ignore it. Okay? The one who is going to have tsar from having said whatever he said is going to be the kid. Will reflect on what he said, and the kid will be afraid, fearful that you might lessen your support of him and your faith in him because of that stupid thing that he said. And that's why after a day, definitely go over to the kid and reiterate your support of him. Show him that you're still behind him as strongly as you ever were. Okay? That's the important thing.
And one more question.
What time is it?
11:10.
Maybe we could arrange for another. I originally felt that we'll make three sessions. And despite my contradictory feeling that the presentation that I said at the McDonald last week should take somewhere around 20 minutes, and of course, I can tell you my concept of time is subject to many stresses and pressures. It comes out sometimes with something so bizarre that I'm not sure. But after we came, in a more sane and realistic approach, I figured that we'd meet three times, but maybe we will meet four. I think these are very important things, and it can take all things at once. I'm trying to have everything. Okay, we need time. Understand? You want to throw one in?
One. Just one short question.
One
short question. If a 9-year-old, how much davening should a 9-year-old do on a day off?
That is a marvelous question. It's an important question. It's a question that leads some parents to be fighting with each other like cats and dogs. I mean a mother and a father over the amount of davening that the kid davens. And the father will say that this kid is davening. He doesn't daven, and the mother will say, "We get off it. The only reason he doesn't daven is because he's bringing it." And that's the opposite. The father is the one who insists, and the father doesn't. He doesn't. He's telling to the mother, "Leave him alone. Let him grow up." Right? That is something that cannot be. It's a mar adover hashavul chol nefesh. That's it. Careful in pressuring the kid wants to play, the kid wants to walk out in the middle, and you're talking about a 9-year-old
boy.
9-year-old boy, okay. The building on South 3rd Street, I wasn't there when it was built, it was built in 1853 or something. It was like a massive fortress. And the two buildings next to it, where the dormitory was, next to it, on South 3rd Street, they were built in 1848, because there was a big sign on it, 1848. But Pavel Mendelovich was still alive then, the decision was made to build a new dormitory. It's still there, the dormitory, it's standing. Anybody who wants to drive past it is welcome. The dormitory, the entrance to the dormitory was the building was, this is South 2nd Street, this is South 3rd Street, here was the yeshiva, and here was the dormitory, and there was a space in the middle. Okay, and the boys went back and forth. understand? Within. The chotzer in between the two. The dormitory is very well built. That's one of the reasons they didn't take it down. It was built with steel girders. Okay? So the frame was steel, not like today's frames that are made of some kind of aluminum thing with sheetrock. I literally have no idea how these things sound. I would think that the big bad wolf could come in, huff and puff and blow them, you know, away. But they tell us that the engineers who designed them are satisfied that they won't do that. Well, that building was built with steel girders. I'll tell you something I shouldn't tell you, but during Kriyas HaTorah, when we davened in the yeshiva building, which was on this side, that building was, the girders were all up, but the walls weren't up, they were up at the end of the year, and then the insides were built. It was less than a year before the whole thing. The foundation and the girders took for the longest part, but the whole thing didn't take more than a year and a half. So it took quite a few months when the girders were up, and then the frame making brick was started on the bottom. But during Kriyas HaTorah, I could tell you about kids who were climbing on those girders. If the parents would have seen them, they might have had a heart attack. But that's the thing, and I'll say the next word, we did. From the beginning of Kriyas HaTorah, or from the beginning of Chazor HaShatz, or from some point earlier, when we could sneak out and go climb the steel over there. Yeah. Crawl along these things up high in the air, all over the place. And when I think of the Cheshvan, of when that happened, so I'll tell you a very interesting thing. I was 9 years old then, and I was a boy. They want to know how much pressure you should do for 9-year-old boys if they don't daven that much like they should. Well, I could tell you the next year I was 10 that I davened a little more, I'm sure. But it was shortly afterwards, you know, let go by little. So some kids, they stay by the fire the whole time. And you think to yourself, look at that. Look at, you know, Getzel and Todd, all these wonderful kids. And I tell the kid, and you, lazy good for nothing. You take out the kid and give him 2 foot, he's in the patch. Comes home, boy. Let the kid grow up, right? Leave the father and mother out of it. There's definitely, with their disagreement, will not be effective in having him grow up on his own. That will not, absolutely not contribute to his development, the healthy normal child. These things work after a certain age. I mean, if you see him doing this as a bar mitzvah book, you'll tell him kindly, come on back into shul, that's where you belong. Your bar mitzvah, and that's it. Okay? And he'll tell you, but I think take a look over there, this one and that one and the other one. I don't know. These are all very good boys and very nice boys. Don't ever tell, say something bad about the kid. And I'm sure that the reason is probably that it takes them maybe a little drop longer than the birthday of 13 to really become bar mitzvah. But you are definitely a bar mitzvah. And you should do things like a real bar mitzvah. And I can assure you that soon those kids are going to do the same thing. So, and then you could add later that maybe if you do it, they'll stop and they'll run inside and stay with Ellington. That would be a great thing. But even then, don't impression. Look, all over America, we have kiddush clubs. What are kiddush clubs? You know, adults, 25, 30, 40, 50, 60, and all ages in between, they leave at the beginning of the Haftarah, and those are the best ones. And I don't want to guess what the other ones do. And their idea is to go downstairs to have a swanky kiddush, right? With a lot of, how would I say it, substance things. I mean, high alcoholic content beverages. And they gorge themselves. And the idea is to stay and do it for the Haftarah. More than anything else, for the rabbi's speech, which he gives afterwards to an almost empty shul. Right? And come back just for the beginning of Mosif, or for the middle of Mosif, or okay. Who leaves davening? Adults. Big grown-ups. Right? And who comes back half shikur or three-quarters shikur? That they could hardly walk the steps in a straight line. They lost three drinks back. They lost the ability to do it. And they all come running in. It's an unbelievable, this kiddush club. The young Israel came out with a scathing indictment of kiddush clubs. One guy tried out for Rabbonus, and before he came for the interview, so the chief Baal Bos told him, "Rabbi, you're the most qualified candidate that we ever met before, and I just hope that you take the job. I just want to tell you a thing or two. Don't ever, ever try to stop the kiddush club. Okay? One or two other things. But so, how much is an adult supposed to come for Kriyas HaTorah? Just be careful. Let's forget about that. Strike it from the record. The don't fight over it. And try to handle it with a light hand, not a heavy hand. Okay? That's extremely important. The kid, let the kid grow out of his childishness, out of his playfulness. Okay? I still think back about climbing those girders, and I'll tell you, I enjoy them even while thinking of it. And it's so great. Marvelous. Understand? Don't worry. You can't really get people to stop instantly to do things which are great and marvelous and which feel so excited. Okay? No, don't, you know. Watch the kids when they play. Huh? Here in Sifta, we have a grand place because we have a big, giant area for the kids. They could go out and on a little lobby and downstairs and upstairs there, and outside and when it's a nice day, and on the porch, they have the shetach. Watch them. Watch them as they jump and fly and run and enjoy every moment of it. And then think to yourself that with your roof, with your growling and violent mood, you're going to get him to drop all that and to sit next to you. It's only the threat of being tortured that comes out, that sort of, you know, freezes him in fear the next time he wants to do that lovely, enjoyable thing. Okay? So be realistic. 9-year-old No. I don't even know. It's not a major issue, but